Good morning, and welcome to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Albert Morales, your host and managing partner of the IBM Center for the Business of Government. We created the center in 1998 to encourage discussion and research into new approaches to improving government effectiveness. You can find out more about the center by visiting us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. The Business of Government Radio Hour features a conversation about management with a government executive who is changing the way government does business. Our special guest this morning is Admiral Robert F. Willard, Vice Chief of Naval Operations, United States Navy. Good morning, Admiral.
Good morning, Al.
And joining us in our conversation, also from IBM, is Chuck Pro. Good morning, Chuck.
Good morning, Al.
Admiral, our listeners obviously will be very familiar with the United States Navy, but perhaps you could tell them about your role. And also, could you describe your office and your role in the chain of command?
Of course. As you can tell by the title, Vice Chief, I'm second to the Chief of Naval Operations. He's responsible by Title 10 for organizing, training, and equipping the United States Navy. He also functions as one of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. My role is to work the Navy staff and generally work inside the Pentagon in any of the myriad issues that he's responsible for. I'm considered Mr. Inside if he's Mr. Outside. So he does the traveling for the Navy. I'm generally attending the meetings. And the staff, the big Navy staff that he's responsible for, is generally under my oversight.
We understand that you started your career as a fighter pilot and have considerable tactical aviation experience. What did this teach you about taking and managing risks?
Well, the military is an inherently risky business, I think. When I was commanding a fighter squadron, I once gave a briefing to my aviators in which I was attempting to characterize the kind of risk issues, emergencies that we could possibly contend with in our business. And in giving this briefing, I listed the emergencies that I could remember having experienced over 17 consecutive years of flying. And I surprised myself to see how many emergencies were drawn on the board at the end of that experience. I put a red dot next to the ones that I could recall F-14s or other aircraft being lost, and black dots next to the emergencies where I could recall a deceased aviator. The message to the aviators in my squadron was that in our inherently risky business, given enough time doing what we did for a living, you would experience all of those incidents. And the goal was to learn to manage those risks in a way that you wouldn't become a red or a black dot at the end of the day. And I think risk management has become a focal point not only of aviation safety but of the way that we characterize managing risk in combat and even in the business end of our business. So it is very much a part of our lives.
Interesting. We also understand that you served as Deputy Commander Pacific Fleet and Commander 7th Fleet. What was the greatest challenge that you faced at Fleet Headquarters and in the Numbered Fleet Command, and what have these roles contributed to your leadership style?
I think it was in balancing the impact of and responsibilities of the fleet across the myriad countries and regions that we were responsible for in the Pacific and Indian Oceans. If you think about that part of the world, it's an incredibly important part of the world, both economically and from a security standpoint. And there's a lot of history there where these countries have often conflicted in the past, and we still have issues with North Korea and some currently with China and Taiwan and concerns over the war on terror down in Southeast Asia and extending into the Middle East. Getting to know the counterparts and attempting to influence the security of that region across all those cultures and all those countries and the great expanse in time and distance, I think, was the challenge for the fleets in the Pacific.
Admiral Willett, on a lighter note, we understand that you were involved with coordinating the aerial activities of the popular movie Top Gun. Could you tell us about these this experience?
Sure, Chuck. it was a once-in-a-lifetime experience, I guess, is the way I'd describe it. Very unique in getting to work with Paramount during that time. We shot, I think, in the course of aerial footage, about 280,000 feet of aerial film. And we hadn't practiced that before, so we were learning to fly into a camera for the first time, often without any rehearsal. So it was actually very challenging flying. We tended to fly closer, lower to the ground, and slower, which in a Mach 2 fighter is not the most stable position to be in throughout the movie. So for those of us that flew in the movie, very challenging flying, and it was a lot of fun to meet the actors too. So it was a great experience.
Very good. Thank you. We understand that you also taught at the Navy Flight Fighter Weapons School, the real live Top Gun. Could you tell us about your experience there and how this has impacted your current management style?
Navy Fighter Weapons School, I think, prides itself on excellence in its instruction, both in the classroom and in the cockpit. And as a Top Gun instructor, we spent many, many hours practicing both, practicing our flying skills and the teaching and learning that goes with flying, and in preparing the lecture series that Fighter Weapons School is so famous for. So I think as you walk away from that experience, you walk away with a passion for instruction, which I think I've retained over all these years, and also some standards with regard to presentation and standards with regard to just excellence in our profession that I'll never forget.
What role did the Navy play in the base closing process? We will ask Vice Chief of Naval Operations, Admiral Willard, to share with us when the conversation about management continues on the Business of Government Hour.